Bring back BBSs, that's what I say. Oh, we are back. We are here. We are on YouTube, I think. Off the Hook Overtime, Emmanuel here. Kyle, you there?
Hi.
In Signalland, we have Rob, we have Gila, we have Alex.
Yes.
We're all here.
All right.
Hail, hail.
Okay, and are we on YouTube?
Still waiting for that little delay to catch up.
On my machine, we're started.
Oh.
Wow, your machine's faster. How about that? Let's wait for Rob, though.
Okay, we're there.
Rob has caught up. Good. And Alex, you have a special guest, it looks like.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, why don't you say hello?
Hello.
Yeah, it doesn't help us identify the special guest, now, does it?
Yeah, why don't you introduce yourself, get a little closer.
I'm Sasha.
We know you, yes. You've been on before. You've been on before.
Yeah, you've been on the radio before. You've been a guest on YouTube before. And who are you and what's your relationship to the show?
Don't you know these things, Alex?
I do,
wow.
Yeah. I have nothing to say.
All right.
Wow, putting him on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm my dad's son.
You are? Your father's son?
Well, that's
right.
That's definitely one way of putting it.
That's right. And who's your father?
Alex.
That's right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, it's you.
I didn't know this would be trivia
night. Now I get it. All right. You made that about as difficult as you possibly could. All right, cool.
Yeah.
And this is the one that's about to become a teenager, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. This is what happens when you keep feeding them. Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's kind of cool. Let me ask Sasha if you have any feelings about these age requirements that we're talking about as far as access to social media and the Internet and even operating systems.
I think it could prove to be a little bad because, as we know, in Australia, they've made it you have to be, 13 years old. So I think kids are going to start, getting really excited about using social media and just start using it more when they reach 13.
Do you think they'll obey it before they're 13?
Oh, I think they'll get this type of what's it called?
A VPN, I mean?
No. Yeah, maybe they'll get VPNs, but also I feel like they'll get this, I forgot what it's called, but like they'll get this type of excitement to get social media. I feel like this will well up inside them, so then when they get it, they'll use it way, way, way more.
So you think it'll have the opposite effect? Instead of like controlling it in kids, it's going to make kids want to use it all the more.
Yeah.
Wow. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way. Right. Because, like, you know, why people like to drink alcohol, you know, before you're 21, it's something that's forbidden. So it becomes more interesting and more exciting to do it because it's forbidden. Right. And that's why, you know, you slam a six pack in the woods when you're 15 years old because it's kind of exciting and you can drink. Right. You know, you guys remember doing that. Of course, you know, we were all from Long Island. These are the types of things that,
okay,
that we...
You know, just because we're from Long Island doesn't mean that we do that. But, yeah, I mean, we knew...
Also, I would like to remind you that we're not all from Long Island.
That's true, too. That's true.
Yep, nobody's perfect. Yeah.
Some of us from the Midwest, and, you know, they have their habits as well. So there's different things. But, but in Germany, you know, drinking age is, what, 16? And they're a lot more mature when they reach, say, 18. Because they already are allowed to do these things, and it's, you know, I guess some people can handle it, but some people are able to, and it's, you know, it doesn't really define who they are.
Yeah, I mean, when I lived in England for a year when I was, I guess I was 19 to 20, I mean, it was amazing to me to be able to drink at that age and responsibly and just kind of get used to going and having a drink at a pub or... Yeah, out with your friends, whatever. And then coming back to New York, you know, when I was 20 and had to wait an entire year again just to be able to go. It's the whole thing seemed just so silly to me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and there really is something that's just inherently contradictory or some sort of perverse result when you can enlist in the military at 18 and you can die for your country, but you are just too young to have a drink.
I think you can enlist at 17. You just can't join until you're 18.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, you know, I think all of these instances where age has been implemented as the way of deciding when you're mature enough, they don't seem to work. You know, I remember when the drinking age was 18 in New York and then it went to 19. And then a year later, it went to 21. And there were people who actually had turned 18 just when it went up to 19. And they were about to turn 19, and then it went up to 21. And I think some of them just left the country at that point. Gila, go ahead.
So I did want to take a moment and say hello to the 57 people who are with us right now. That's actually really a shockingly high number for 6 minutes in.
Wow.
And to share a comment from our friend Zap in the chat, who says, love how Sasha is playing it cool, like he doesn't know how to get around the restrictions in front of his dad. Clever kid.
You think your dad is going to keep you from using the internet because you're not of a certain age? He's cooler than that, isn't he?
Yeah.
Good. Good to hear. Good to hear that confirmed.
If that changes, let us know.
Yeah, let us know right away if that changes.
He's not under any duress at the moment.
Uh-huh. Yeah, if he said that himself without you staring intently at him like that, I'd believe it a lot more. But
but also, I had one other thing I was thinking of, which was I was on a teen trip to another country when I was in high school, and one of the forms that your parents had to sign was the smoking form. Because there was not an age restriction on cigarette purchases there. And if your parents were okay with you smoking, because this was in the 90s, they could sign a form, and our counselors kept them. And if your parents said it was okay for you to smoke, then by gum, you could smoke when there was no age restriction. It was gross.
My high school had a smoking shed. Can anyone else say that? Ward Melville High School had a smoking shed, and teachers and students would hang out in it. In fact, once the principal even walked in, and people were smoking pot, and he just made like he didn't know what was going on and was looking for somebody. Things were different. Things were very different. Alex?
Yeah, we had one of those in my high school as well. There was like this outdoor area that, you know, I guess ironically had some kind of ceiling over it too, which doesn't make for a good smoking environment, presumably. But that's where you know, all the bad kids hung out, and the teachers would go out there and smoke too, and it was just normal. It was a normal thing.
I remember going to classes at Stony Brook in my freshman year, and professors and students in these small classrooms would be smoking like chimneys. It really annoyed me, but it was normal. It was something, you know, I don't think that was a good thing at all. I think, you know, when you're forced to inhale smoke, and, you know, it was true in restaurants and bars and on trains, it was awful. It was really awful. So, you know, I'm all for people having the freedom to do what they want, but not to force other people to experience that with them, especially if there's no way out. All right. I don't know where all this came from, but yeah. So we were talking about changing the way people look at social media, maybe not having so much advertising or any advertising. And we were thinking, and we were talking about it during the break, that you know, BBS is actually kind of, you know, typified that. It was a forum for people to go back and forth with various things. Yeah, it was slow. It was something that only one person could access at a time. But it wasn't controlled by any massive company. It was controlled by the people who ran the BBS. I think something more in that direction would be healthier. Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I was I want to shout out my pals on Mastodon, because they're, you know, every Mastodon instance has its own rules, and a lot of them will boot you off if you're an advertiser. They won't allow commercial entities on, and critically, your feed is just the accounts that you follow. There's no extra stuff slipped in there by an algorithm to, you know, get in front of your eyeballs because someone paid for it. They end up self-supporting little things. Either somebody runs it as a hobby, or the community, you know, pitches in and helps keep it going in a nonprofit sort of way. And that was how a lot of BBSs worked back in the day. That's how a lot of Fediverse instances work nowadays. And, you know, it's one of the places where you can kind of see what things are like with that sort of attitude again.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that seems like a healthy way to deal with it. Alex?
Yeah, you know, I miss the days of BBSs, and I was just looking this up. It's kind of interesting. There's still this weird BBS culture. It's very different, obviously, because it's not through modems anymore, right? But it there are telnet-based BBSs, or BBSs that you can SSH into and have that similar experience, and they run software called Synchronet, Mystic, WWIV. You know, remember back in the day, there was Renegade, there was, God, I can't remember the other. I just remember Renegade. Rob, you're shaking here. What were the other BBS softwares? Wildcat was a big one, too.
Wildcat.
Yeah. I remember WWIV, definitely.
We used to run that, I think, at WWIV. I remember that, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really? Yeah, WWIV? Really? I don't remember that one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd never heard of that until now. But there is this culture that says, I think it would be pretty cool to play around with it. But it's different when anybody can tell that into a machine. I mean, it's just an open port, right? It was kind of unique when you had to wait for somebody to get off the BBS so you could go on and collect your mail and interact with people. It was your time on somebody else's machine.
But I assume with the way you're describing that, more than one person can access it at once.
I would think so, right? I mean, that would be really unique if could have only one.
If somebody can come up with an address, we'll share it tonight, and maybe that can be our BBS home for a little while.
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah. I think we should have an off-the-hook, overtime BBS system.
Okay, well, you suggested it, so you get to run it.
Easy. I'll happily be the sysop. Why not? Yep. Uh-huh. D-O-F-H. Yep. You just wait.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. That would be
I look
cool.
forward to uploading text files compressed with the least compression so it gets my ratio up.
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
Honestly, there are like a ton of examples, and this is possible. People have emulated this stuff. There are probably even like retro hardware sites that are hosting the ability to connect and access older stuff online. Like it is really it's a great time to try to interconnect and build these things and play around with them. And I really mean what I said earlier about, like, just, like, show off. Let's, like, have examples of cool ways to communicate or whatever, tell your stories or share information, like, that is a nod in a certain way to like, BBSs and that way of communicating. But there's all kinds of ways to implement it. So I really encourage people to play around with it. It doesn't have to be any way that someone decided at a third party. You can kind of make it up and innovate in the process.
And you know, one thing that gets overlooked or often forgotten was, you know, the whole, not only just the old school 1990s and 80s aesthetic of it, but there was a real art scene associated with BBSs back in the day. I mean, you had ICE, you had ACID, right? I mean, I was part of both of them at some point, but I used to run telecom as like the resident phone freak for all these artists for ACID, which was ANSI Creators in Demand back then. And some of the artwork that these guys through ANSI would create, still to this day, is mind-bogglingly beautiful and just absolutely amazing. And to think that they did it literally bit by bit there, you know, one ANSI code to another was really kind of extraordinary that they would create this really beautiful, ornate BBS art that would load just, line by line by line, you know, on your screen. There was something about that aesthetic and something about that art that I think, you know, will always stand the test of time. And I think that ACID and some of these groups still exist today and are still creating art. It's just not as widely appreciated.
Yeah, we've got a bunch of people in the chat talking about how there absolutely are still modem-based BBSs to be found out there, and I want to ask our folks out there, where can we find them? What's a good place to start looking if you're getting back into this after a while or just interested in checking it out for the first time now?
If someone out there wants to actually give us a phone number, we'll try the number first, and then we'll say it publicly so people can hear a modem pick up in 2026.
Absolutely. I was going to mention the phones are ready to go whenever we want to get
that. No, they're not. I haven't.
I'm ready to go on that side.
Okay.
Also, we had been talking about a listing of web SDR. That's for radio and remote listening, which is an incredible thing that's hosted in a lot of ways. And there was a particular site we mentioned that is basically a directory listing of a lot of web accessible SDR stations or relays or whatever they're called. But is there a directory of BBSs that are currently on? Has someone curated like a current list so that, okay, here's a number, a bunch of numbers. Are there multiple versions of that? Please share that. We can share it too. Go ahead.
We had a chime in the chat from SYNDWS or SYNDWS. I apologize. Do chime in with your preferred pronunciation. But apparently Tuxedo Cat Lounge is a good active Wildcat-based BBS with Telnet and modem connection. Telnet BBS Guide is good for a list.
There you go.
Wow. Okay. Well, this sounds like something
And then I'm seeing C64 specific ones too, 1015H here. I'm just going to keep reading because I don't understand any of this.
I think 1015H is someone telling what time it is where they are.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that was a CBS movie.
Yeah.
If we had WW4 and then 1015H, you're like, which one are you running?
So, and yeah, go ahead.
Someone else just chimed in, said, love me some BBS. I use a TNT ROM on a Commodore 64 to connect to Telnet BBSs.
That is awesome.
You know, last week we were talking about SDR, software-defined radio, and some great sites that enable you to basically tune a radio in various parts of the world. And we started listening to an Iranian number station, or the frequency that had an Iranian number station, and started hearing this weird sound, which later turned out to be confirmed as jamming. And we were listening to it live and heard this. Now, the radio signal with the number station first started broadcasting on February 28th, about 12 hours after the U.S. and Israel began bombing Iran. I'm not sure how people are able to pinpoint exactly when a particular frequency started broadcasting, but there are people out there who are very dedicated. On a scratchy shortwave signal, almost twice a day, I believe the frequency was 7910 kilohertz. In the early morning and early evening, on coordinated universal time, a man's voice can be heard speaking Persian, counting out a series of apparently random numbers. Numbers are read out for varying stretches of time, followed by a pause, in which the word in Persian for attention is spoken three times. The mystery of the transmission transfixed many in the global community of amateur radio sleuths who have traded notes and tips on the signal, who's behind it, and what its purpose might be. Then, beginning on March 4th, which is actually exactly 1 week ago when we were listening, the signal started to be jammed. I have to wonder, was it one of our listeners? No, because we started talking about it, and we tuned to it, and then it started being jammed while we were listening.
Well, we have listeners in unlikely places, so perhaps.
Yeah, we sure do. There was a screech of electronic noise that made it all but impossible to hear the numbers. The original transmission paused for a period of time, then move to another shortwave frequency, because you can do that in the shortwave world. So, yeah, now we have to find it again. But the number stations are really interesting. It's just basically people reading numbers, and if you have a one-time pad, you're able to translate that, and if you don't, you're not able to. It's simple. That's also pretty damn secure. Yes, Alex.
So in thinking about this, and also there was a pretty excellent Financial Times article about this particular shortwave station yesterday that came out and had some recordings of it, of the actual transmissions, as well as some older transmissions. And it got me into thinking, like, God, what the hell? You know, way back, long time ago, 20-something years ago, when I lived in D.C., and coincidentally at the time, I was working at CIA way back then, and something came out called the Conant Project. Do you guys remember the Conant Project by any chance? Have you ever heard of this?
No.
So the
Conant Project. Ice cream and a thing you can hold, right?
No, a little bit different. This was a guy who back in the early 2000s had compiled a huge archive of recordings of number stations and then put them on these various CDs and then released the recordings out to the Internet as well. So you could freely download the Conant Project number stations recordings, and they're pretty cool, and they're still out there. And, you know, you would hear recordings like the Lincolnshire Poacher, you know, that would predate, that would be like the preamble to a British number station coming out. But in any event, I digress. I think the Conant Project is really cool. We should maybe play some of their stuff if we can, if we can find it. And I'm sure we can find it probably pretty easily. It's Conet and then Project, spelled like Project. But we were always thinking about, because this was a transmission in Farsi that would be coming, that the transmission started at the time when the war with Iran had started, we were operating under the assumption that this was an Iranian number station. It's very interesting that it could be the opposite of this. And this is what the Financial Times article had intimated yesterday, is that some people, based on the time it would take for the transmission to get from one place to another, had crudely triangulated the location of the broadcaster of the shortwave signal to someplace in Western Europe as opposed to Iran, which would indicate that, in all likelihood, the number station was not Iranian in origin at all, because in order for an Iranian intelligence operative to do that at such capacity, they would probably need the okay or some kind of authority from the local government in order to broadcast at that power level. So in all likelihood, this was an intelligence agency from the Western world, possibly the United States, that could be broadcasting over to Iran and trying to communicate with Iranian assets in Tehran or elsewhere as a means of communication, because the internet is down, the phone lines are down, you can't, you know, meet with these people obviously in person anymore. And so shortwave radio would be a way, and this is something that is not my own making or mine. This is what the Financial Times article had stated yesterday. So this isn't anything classified at all, but in all likelihood, this was Western intelligence agencies broadcasting out numbers to Iranian assets. And there is also the possibility that Western intelligence agencies started this number station for the sole purpose of making Iran think that they were broadcasting out instructions to operatives internally in Tehran, when maybe there were actually none. So the whole thing could really also be a subterfuge. And the jamming that we were hearing was very likely Iran jamming that number station. Well, so it's pretty interesting that we were kind of right in the midst of all of this last week while we were on the air.
Let me also point out that the story I just read was titled "Random Numbers, Persian Code, A Mysterious Signal Transfixes Radio Sleuths and Intelligence Experts." And that story came from RFERL.org, which is Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. So if what you're saying is true, Alex, then not only is U.S. intelligence involved in this signal, but they're also involved in putting out stories that make it seem like they don't know what the signal is. That's a level of subterfuge that I didn't think we were capable of, but I guess, you know, U.S. intelligence can do anything. And right now, you might hear some static in the background. That is us listening to the frequency from last week, 7910 kilohertz live. We're listening to that from the Netherlands. So that's what it sounds like right now. So if somebody out there, one of our listeners, has a jammer, go ahead, turn it on. Let's hear you. But I think they might have moved to a different frequency. And if anyone knows that frequency, let us know, and we'll tune to it. That noise isn't too distracting, is it?
It's better than the ringing. I would also...
You want the I'll bring the crossbar ringing back. I can do that.
I will cry. I will absolutely cry. Also, would like to point out that Alex, a bunch of people have mentioned the CONET project, remembering it, and Tim in Connecticut points out there is a CONET project wiki page. And people are asking, the 2600 BBS archive.
Voice BBS.
The Voice BBS archive. Yeah. Is that something that can be accessed online, or is it just the... that you can buy?
Well, we don't have the bandwidth to have it online. People would be constantly connecting to it and listening, because there's a lot there. We spent years putting it together. We'd like to offer it for free, obviously, but we don't want to have to pay to offer it for free. So there's only so much we can put into this. So all it takes is one person buying it and putting it online at a place where they have the bandwidth to handle it. Nobody's done that yet. And I think about three people have bought it. So, we need a little more community here, and maybe more of us can hear it. But it's there. It's all structured. There's thousands of messages, and we want them out there. That's why we did it.
And the link for the BBS archive, the BBS voice archive, is now in the chat if anybody wants to pick that up for themselves.
Well, you can give the link out, I guess, because even I
can. I'm the only one who can do that, though.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
Well, it's a place you go to. You click on it, it takes you to a website, but that's not important right now.
Okay, don't give it out. I don't care.
it's store at 2600.com. It's in the store.
Just search for Voice BBS, I guess.
Search for Voice BBS. It's right there.
All right. We're going to activate the phone line. Who wants to give out the phone number?
Sasha?
I don't think he knows the phone number. You know what? If none of you know the phone number, I'm not going to take calls.
Sasha's going to do it.
802-321-HAT.
Okay, but it has to be numerical.
4225.
All right, 802-321-4225. Thank you. And the phone lines are now open. If you're out there and you wish to share something with us, please give us a call, and we'll be happy to hear from you. Yes, Rob.
And while we're waiting, someone did mention that to anyone that does have the 2600 voice PBS files, look up M11212 and M11213 to hear young me talking. Because I did use the voice PBS back in the day. I don't remember what I said. I hope it wasn't too ridiculous, but I assure people I'm much older and wiser these days.
Okay.
And just to clarify,
that's not a real phone call.
Someone says, are you all asking us to buy it and then share it publicly? We're not asking you to do it. We're just saying that, like, that's a thing that you could do, and no one would be upset if you did that.
Right. Yeah, it's not forbidden to do that, and it is available to get the complete thing. There are examples online, and, yeah, we put a lot of effort and got a lot of help trying to organize it and recover it and keep it so that people could listen to it. So anyway, yeah, it's up to you. Do what you want. Just do what you like. Listen to it in private. All you
share
want.
It freely is what we're trying to say here. And I think you know that's the best way we can spread it around. Okay, we have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead. Speak up, please. Go ahead. Yes.
All right. Well, I was wondering if, aside from all you've been talking about on the radio and now, if anybody heard yesterday's press conference by our enlightened leader. What I found interesting about that was the defanged and by pledge signed with the Pentagon, now muted media. This has been the most underreported war, other than, you know, in the course of what needs to be essentially propaganda, mm-hmm. what needs to be told to the people here. What I found extremely interesting was that nobody questioned Trump on his phone call with Putin. And his various claims, you know, the most bombastic, of course, attracted a lot of attention. But factually, he said that they have nothing left. All their raiders have been taken out. Well, how are they continuing to target infrastructure in the Gulf states? And since you've talked to Putin, have you asked him what kind of targeting help he's offering to the Iranians? Why nobody got, not even the guts, but the imagination to ask a question like this? And, you know, it's obvious. The facts were laid out there. I don't follow the bastard. And I just happened to be on a site that was carrying it live. And normally I don't even look at the video. It's an Italian newspaper site. But I saw it. I looked at the time. I said, it's 11 o'clock in Italy. It's 5 o'clock here. Maybe it's live. And sure enough, it was. And, I was just shocked by the bevy. It was like a pack of dogs were screaming at every chance they got. And nobody, I mean, I'm sure it's highly scripted. And by now, they only pick the people that they know Oregon. I'm not going to ask any real questions. But I was really just shocked by how banal this would have been for anybody who was paying any kind of attention, and yet nobody came up with this.
Well,
I have to contribute tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, go on.
I agree with most of what you say, but I think we're talking about the same press conference. There was one instance where there was a New York Times reporter who asked him to clarify that he was saying that Iran somehow fired a Tomahawk missile and hit that girl's school. You know, the Times reporter was not letting that go, and I was impressed. I was impressed that somebody actually was holding him to account. I was even more impressed that, I guess because it was a guy, Trump did not attack the reporter. And simply said that if I'm wrong, I'll say so when I find out more. But what he was claiming was utterly ridiculous, and the reporter was having none of it. And I encourage people to find that in that press conference because it's really impressive.
Well, yes, but I beg to differ in this regard. In that, first of all, it's an acquired, from the day one, it was known that it was a tomahawk, and nobody questioned Trump again on his assertion, oh, all kinds of people have the tomahawks. And today, finally, somebody came out and corrected the record. I think it was the Pentagon itself that said, no, we are the only one who have the tomahawks. That's one of our missiles. The only question is, how did we target it wrong? But that, to me, was already acquired through, even just reading the press releases that came out. I don't call them news reporting, from the beginning of the war. And by the way, interestingly, no one is pointing out that this is exactly what Putin did. He still doesn't call the war in Ukraine war, and our elected officials, so to say, are also not calling this a war.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean,
anywho,
they keep calling it a war themselves. They can't keep track of what it is.
Yeah. Right. No, but they don't use the word war. You know, they don't say we're at war with Iran. And by the
way, they absolutely do say that.
The other war crime.
They absolutely do say that. It's been caught many times. They slip up quite a bit.
Okay, that's good. You're paying closer attention than I am. And I want to add that, to the list of war crimes and crimes against humanity that have been committed in the last 10 days, there is also the one of piracy, because, they are sinking ships without any notification and any declaration of war. And last I checked, these are people get tried and hung for this kind of stuff, but I guess not anymore. I just wanted to point all that out, and I'll listen to the rest of the show, and thank you for all the good work you do.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. 802-321-4225. Who had something? Alex, you had something. Go ahead. Alex, you gotta unmute.
No, we didn't mean to chime in. We would rather take another phone call, but it's always good to hear from that caller. Sasha and I have been looking at some old acid art packs in the meantime as well from back in the day on the site 16 Colors, which is 16colo.rs, which is a pretty interesting archive of ANSI art going back to the 90s. And we're taking a look at the acid packs from 1994, 1995, and seeing my old hacker handle in the telecom section.
Now, is that 1-6 or is it spelled out?
1-6. Yeah, 1-6. Okay. So 16colo.rs.
And where is .rs?
I think that's Serbia. I believe it's Serbia.
Is it Serbia?
Yeah, pretty sure it's the Serbian CCTLD.
Okay.
Thanks. You can look it up.
Okay.
A lot of that stuff has been preserved, and it's really cool to look at and get kind of inspired and maybe create your own stuff, kind of develop a little bit of the same style and make it rework it in your own way.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a call now.
We have a call. Okay, good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hi, I just want to say I am a fan of your publication and also of the radio show and a first-time caller, and gotta say I love the work that you're doing. It's very informative and just overall love it. But when it comes to all these age verifications, one thing I got to thinking of is when you have an enterprise or you have like a shared facility, like a university, how are they going to do age checks on like batch rollouts and enterprise for all these machines when it's different people, because they're not necessarily like when you would be an individual at home user? How does that even work in enterprise if they've got this mapped out? Because if this is on all systems, you'd think it would be all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like it's ready-made nightmare for anyone trying to set it up or procure equipment, because you have to take all of these new kinds of baked-in policies, like, in the actual product when you're making large purchasing decisions and trying to forecast and keep the life cycle for whatever institution you're operating. No, that's an incredibly good point, or really just kind of the level of havoc that this has the potential of unleashing on people that are just trying to get tools in front of people, like at a library and so forth. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah, because I'm just trying to picture going, like, if you have, like, a whole rollout of brand-new machines, let's say you're a new company and you're rolling out 50 machines and you have an automated file, that is just wacko on how that would even work. I just can't even imagine how you would even try this from a technical standpoint.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, this is a great example of the rules being put together and announced without any consideration for how the tech actually works, how the implementation of this would actually work. It's very easy to just go and say, you need to do such and such a thing, without considering the technological realities behind what it is you're saying.
It seems like the first default setting that someone like that would change.
Yeah, because you understand from, well, you all probably do from an administrative standpoint, being a sysadmin, this is just like hair pulling and like, okay, so how do we even, because I don't think any of this has been actually thought out very thoroughly.
Yeah.
When it comes to enterprise.
I think we're getting that, definitely.
And really, that's my only other point. I wanted to thank you for being on the show. And, again, I love you all. You make my Wednesday nights very fun to sit there and phone in and listen. It's a great way to do a Wednesday and get informed.
Well, that's,
there's no other, you know, media bias.
That's great to hear. And can we ask where you're calling from?
I'm in Orlando, Florida, and you can call me Little Miss Carol.
Okay. Wow. Well, that's awesome. That's something good out of Florida for sure. And we hope you keep listening.
No worries. Like I said, my friends, I actually go to the 2600 Club that just started here in Orlando.
Uh-huh.
A great group. I'm happy we finally got one down here. And I like to joke around that I'm our resident goth. But
awesome.
I absolutely love the show.
Uh-huh. Great. Yeah, I was aware that there are meetings in Orlando now, so that's really good to hear.
Oh, it's great. The energy and the people are so friendly. I mean, it's really amazing.
Cool. Awesome. Well, best of luck with that. And, yeah, we hope to do more things in the months ahead. And, you know, we'll have all kinds of content to share.
All right. Thanks again for letting me be on the air with y'all. It's been really fun.
All right. Take care. Good night.
Bye.
Isn't that great when we get a call from a place like Orlando? I mean, it's not, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's not that weirder place, but it's, you know.
We live in a big country.
We live in a big country,
it's not
exactly
a monolith. There's a lot of interesting people all over. Let's just not forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Calls are, lines open.
802-321-4225. Rob.
I'm having a great time looking at that 16-color site, but also I want to shout telnetbbsguide.com, which somebody gave out in the chat when we were talking about modem-based BBSs, and this is an excellent site. There are so many BBSs listed here. A lot of them have telnet addresses, but also modem numbers that you can dial in the old manner. You can search the list. You can browse the list. You can filter the list. There is a lot of stuff on here that I'm going to have to, you know, lose days of my life playing with.
Wow. You know, we're not picking up anything on this shortwave frequency, 7910. So if anyone knows of another frequency where the number station might have gone to, or even the jammer, we'll be happy to tune to that. We're listening from the Netherlands right now. But, boy, it sounds kind of empty, doesn't it? I like the sound, I do. But I wouldn't mind hearing some beeps and numbers, maybe?
A number or two.
Yeah, a number or two. That's all. Wow.
Speaking of sounds, how are we sounding this week? Have you had that mystery noise
going
on? Oh,
you don't sound tinny anymore. I
heard it once.
I heard that noise once, but it was nothing like before. So it's definitely an improvement.
I got a better mic hooked up, but also we think we've narrowed it down to plumbing in the walls. So there may not be a heck of a lot we can do about it.
Wow. Well, you know, tear down the walls and find the source. That's what you have to do. We have a phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me fine?
We hear you just fine. Go ahead.
Okay. This is Cindy. I was in the chat earlier and, you know, first-time caller,
uh-huh.
You know, long-time listener. Well, not long-time, you know, listener.
Okay.
But, you know, I was more wanting to talk about alternate forms of communication like we were talking about earlier. And because, you know, we were talking about setting up BBSs and stuff like that. I feel like a lot of that is also a good way to circumvent, you know, digital a lot of the digital censorship right now, especially the age verification stuff in regards to, you know, forcing it up on operating system maintainers is a big issue because it shows a fundamental misunderstanding of how these systems work from, you know, the very highest level of, you know, legislation.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, they explicitly don't understand that much of this either isn't possible to enforce or it's not. And the other issue when they're doing this in Colorado is they're saying there's going to be heavy fines for anyone who doesn't comply, which, you know, what's going to happen then? Are distro maintainers basically just going to go online and, you know, I assume they're going to have some sort of a checkbox on their, you know, download sites that say something like, I declare I don't reside in the state of Colorado or state of California or something like that, depending on, you know, wherever these are implemented. And especially, I feel like 2600 should definitely set up some sort of either, you know, voice BBS or text-based BBS or something of that form again, just to give people a, you know, an alternate way to communicate and meet each other and stuff like that.
Well, it would be great if the voice BBS was the answer to all this. We just went right back to it. But obviously it has to change with the times and grow more capacity and things like that. But, you know, I think that's a good way of thinking, you know, that we can come up with a solution ourselves.
Yeah, definitely. And as for, you know, it's a way you can play your part. As for, you know, something like Telnet BBS Guide, it's probably very interesting because a lot of these kinds of communities and, you know, concepts that have thought to have been, you know, either lost to time or very not prevalent anymore are totally still around in just smaller circles with less publicity. Like even the, you know, there's still a decently vibrant phone phreaking scene that's just, you know, there's not much publicity anymore, but it's very much still a thing. All of these scenes have never really gone away. A lot of the stuff that you can find on these networks has never even fully gone away. And you really just have to know where to look for it all.
Can you describe what the phone phreaking scene is like today?
It all still boils down to exploration in the very end. And not only exploration of, you know, the U.S. telephone system, but, for example, calling internationally. Even, you know, stuff like blue boxable trunks, stuff like that, are still in use in very, very rural parts of, you know, like, there are still electromechanical, you know, step-by-step switches with SF signaling out in rural parts of Russia and, you know, other, like, eastern countries, especially eastern countries, a lot of strange signaling in South America, and, of course, in the U.S., still. It's still this massive network with tons of, you know, strange recordings, strange
wow.
things to hear, strange hardware to call into, stuff like that. And, you know, every day people are still just finding strange ways to pick at it.
If you come across any phone numbers that go to any step or crossbar switches out there, we would love to hear them and call them. That sounds amazing.
I do actually have a few, and I have one, but I'm not sure if I should share it. I can ask right now.
Well, you can email us, oth@2600.com, and not share it with the whole world, I guess, and we won't abuse it, we promise.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. But, a lot of this old equipment is still in use, and just, you know, as I said, you just need to know where to look for things. Oh, you know, Alaska's a good place, especially, like, the outside of the continental United States.
Uh-huh.
There's still a lot of, like, the Alaskan telcos still have really strange stuff. There's loop around stuff like that, you know, especially in places like Alaska.
Interesting. Okay, I thought everything was completely digital in the States, even Alaska and Hawaii.
I mean, even in the States, there's still some analog in use. Very, very, very rare, but, you know, weird corners of the network, weird stuff shows up because you can only imagine how massive it is and how long this has been going on. I mean, yesterday was the 150th anniversary of the telephone.
I didn't know that. Oh, wow, I missed that. That's 150th anniversary of the telephone.
Yeah, March 10th. Graham Bell made the first, you know, successful phone call. So.
Wow. Okay, well, let's mark that now, then, a day late, but still, 150 years.
It was very significant.
150 years, and, you know, so much of this is still around. So many of these aspects of the network that by most people were thought to have died out years and years ago.
Uh-huh. Wow. Well, that's fascinating info. It really is. Kyle?
Yeah, I love the discussion you're talking about.
That's really what hacking has always been about and what, you know,
absolutely.
Stuff like this has always been about is just exploration, understanding systems and understanding, you know, ways to use them that are, you know, above what's, I guess, you know, mm-hmm. the norm.
Yeah, right. Oftentimes there's so many layers of the networks that are built on top of the same bits of infrastructure, so they don't really go away. They get retired, they're kind of pushed over, pushed aside, but a lot of the stuff remains in place if it didn't sort of succumb to another layer of a new service. So, you know, that's a great way to characterize it. Really, thank you for that explanation.
Yeah, it really sums it up well.
In the physical sense, like you were kind of talking about right there. Now, there are very few, you know, electromechanical switches in the network that you can still call into, stuff like that. But I'm sure plenty of these switches are still just left around rotting in central offices all over the world because many of these things are so large they can't manage to move them out. It's not worth it. They have enough space for, you know, other equipment because it's gotten so much smaller, for example. So a lot of this is just left practically abandoned in a CO somewhere, for example.
That's an excellent point. And, you know, if you look at a central office, every neighborhood has a central office. Track it down. It's usually like a brick building. It has a phone company logo or something on it, but it's much bigger than it needs to be because today's digital switches, they're tiny, and these are buildings filled with, you know, the equivalent of mainframes, I guess. A lot of space, and yeah, how do you move that out of there? Why do you move that out of there? They're inside, literally rotting. Maybe we can find some kind of use for them. Get the old phone network going again.
A few things that I recommend definitely are two things. On Verizon's website, if you look up Verizon network disclosures, they're mass retiring a lot of 5ESSs in, you know, some of their territories. So they list, you can find the exchanges that are used for those and just kind of call around them, try to find anything interesting on the switches they're retiring. It's all in good fun. And there's also a website, freakscan.com, which is basically for, you know, people who are interested in this to post interesting phone numbers and list them by category. And there's just plenty of, you know, weird stuff to go call around. So post if you, you know, make an account with them and go through all that process. But especially just stuff to call around, kind of listen to this, you know, old equipment. There's much of it still in use and much of it is there. So.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for all the info and inspiration. May we ask where you're calling from?
I'm calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
Okay, awesome. Please, if you know any of those switches or ways that we can hear them, let us know. This makes me very hopeful that there's still old technology out there that we can hear and play with and just learn something from.
Yep, spirit of exploration.
Absolutely.
I'll definitely shoot an email, OTH at 2600. So.
Okay, thank you. And wow, good phone calls tonight. I'm amazed.
Yeah.
802-321-4225 if people want to join that list.
You want to hear some cool stuff in the meantime? You wanted to hear some weird noises?
First, I want to hear what Gila had to say. Then we'll hear the cool stuff. Not that Gila's not the cool stuff, too, but I'm just saying Gila first, and then more cool stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I raised my hand. So the callers have been great tonight. The chat has also been great tonight. We believe, have broken a record tonight. At one point, we had 78 people with us. Right now, we're at 72. This is fantastic. Bunch of first-time callers. Everything is wonderful. And I would like to take this opportunity to share that listener One of our listeners has gotten the Voice BBS archive up on their site.
Oh, really? Okay.
However, if you visit 2600.loop0, that's the word loop and the number 0.sh, you will be prompted to put in a password. There's a little CTF feature that will help you. It will require you to find the password. But once you do, you can access the Voice BBS archive.
If you look hard enough, you should be able to find the password to access this page.
I'm telling you.
Well, where do I look? Do I look in this room or a different room?
I suppose that would be telling.
Maybe it's in a different country. Do I have to go somewhere?
That's a good way. I mean, I like this. Make it a puzzle.
Do you have the password, Kyle?
I didn't. I don't have it.
Doctor, interrogate you to get
the
password?
I'm operating the phone.
Well, someone has the password here. We're not going anywhere until we get it.
I mean, are any of us Loop Zero? No.
Huh. Well, if anyone figures this out, let me know. Because I'd like to hear the Voice BBS myself.
I'm guessing it's 2600. This is the password, or maybe it is embedded in the HTML somewhere.
I just entered 2600. It says invalid password. I feel like an idiot. Thank you, Alex.
Well, you know, I'm sure it wasn't the first time today.
No, actually it wasn't.
Yeah.
Loop Zero, the person who owns the website, says, and I quote, use your hacker brain, Emmanuel.
Look, I wasn't doing anything. I followed Alex's advice. I guess my hacker brain should have told me not to do that.
Maybe it's 1984 or something. Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Hang on. This is a shipping forecast
by South Fall
that we just found on 198 kilohertz. Let's listen
now
for a second.
Falling. Sandetti Light Vessel Automatic, West 5, 11 miles, 1019. Greenwich Light Vessel Automatic, West by South 5, 5 miles, 1020. St. Catherine's Point Automatic, West by South 5, 1019, rising.
Okay, if you understand any of that, then you're a captain of something, I guess. But that's just an example of some of the fun things you can hear. I hope that was enjoyable. Okay, Alex, you had some stuff that you wanted to share.
Yeah, so listen to this.
For God's sake. You want to
So that was a recording of the Iranian number station. That was a real broadcast from
okay.
it before
All right.
it was jammed.
All right. Extra points. Can you find audio of the jamming sound that we heard last week?
Yes.
You heard
I think
that
I
live. Okay. While I'm busy with that, we're going to take another phone call. And good evening. You're on Off the Hook Overtime. Go ahead.
Hello, guys. It's Howard from Queens.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you guys?
We're doing pretty good.
Okay, a couple of things. One thing I want to talk to Alex after, seriously. Here's something about that ringing. You know why in the 70s they stopped letting you ring forever? Because if you knew how to build a black box, you could low down the phone line for a split second.
Mm-hmm.
That would stop the ringing, but you still had an audio pack. So if somebody had a black box, they could call your phone number from a pay phone or call you and not get billed.
Yeah.
Because you get supervision.
No supervision, yeah. That's what it was called. When the phone line clicked in a certain way, that's when billing began, even for local calls.
Yeah, well, what it was at least like a second. You had to hold it down long enough for supervision. But if you were able to, if you had a circuit with a capacitor, basically what you were doing is you didn't have enough impedance. You weren't drawing enough current. Once you stopped the ringing, you then just went to a higher impedance circuit. That's basically what it was.
That's right.
Yeah, the only other thing I want to just say is it's getting annoying with all these regulations, protect the young. I'll give you a great example of stupidity. hearing aid batteries, okay? Because I do have Bluetooth hearing aids. They went to a situation now that they went to tamper-proof hearing aid batteries. That means that you have, you know, the card with the batteries, and now you want to take out a battery, you have to have either had a scissor with you. So if you're out and about and you want to, you know, you're carrying some extra batteries, the battery holders are now protected. Because some kid, some baby got to the battery, so they passed a law about that. So here's the situation. Senior citizens or anybody else who, you know, might have a hearing aid, you would have to you have to carry some kind of a razor blade to open up the batteries.
Wow. Okay. And presumably a baby's not going to do that, but still, that sounds a little dangerous.
Well, it's crazy. And yeah. Alice could look it up, basically, and look up the law. They passed the law that hearing aid battery holders have to be sealed, and they have to be tamper-proof.
What the hell, Alex?
Well, I mean, it's not my fault. I didn't do it.
The reason why I mentioned your name about that is that you are a lawyer, so you would just be able to Google the law. I don't know the name of the law, but it's a ridiculous thing that was passed a couple of years ago by Congress.
It's interesting. Yeah, it's probably some kind of regulation that pertains to this particular type of device. Maybe it comes from like it could be even like an FDA regulation or an FTC regulation or something like that. But I could see that very paternalistic type of regulatory action taken here. And I guess the ironic thing is, Howard, that if you're in need of a hearing aid change and you don't have a razor blade on you, you probably can just ask your nearest kid. They're the ones who are probably going to have knives and razor blades on them in the first place. So, you might have to, you know, ask your nearest 12-year-old or something, right? Sasha, do you carry any knives or any razor blades on you these days, or you?
You're asking your own kid this question? Wow.
Yeah. Only when he needs to.
Only when he needs to. Okay. So would you help Howard?
What I'm getting at is the stupidity of saying you create one problem. You try to solve one problem, and you create another problem.
No, I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. Go ahead, Kyle.
I'm not sure if this applies to hearing aid batteries. They're very small.
Alex, the only other thing I've got to ask you is this.
Hang on. Kyle's talking. Go ahead, Kyle. Finish what you're saying.
I was just going to say, I noticed on some, maybe not hearing aid batteries, but some batteries of the smaller size are actually coated in a way that makes them taste bad, I guess, because of young people ingesting them and the fears around that. So it seems like this is an entirely...
Well, they've already ingested them, they're tasting them. Right?
Yeah, it's like a well-trod path of consumer safety, and I guess... With the prevalence of small batteries in households, it is a real concern. But maybe that's something they're going to make it so that the packaging is more accessible because they taste bad. But
it seems
like this is something that is really common.
Clearly, this is not the right solution, and
it shouldn't be impossible to open your hearing aid battery.
No, that's ridiculous.
That's for sure. And maybe there's something around that can help with that.
Back to you, Howard.
Yeah, no, I was saying, the other thing is just real quick. Alex, any way to get a hold of you if you want to talk legal stuff and maybe pay for legal services in a certain area?
Well, I'm happy to have a conversation with you. I don't take many private clients on anymore because I'm the general counsel of the Ethereum name service, but I do practice a little bit of law through my old firm, Kroll & Mooring, but I'm happy to talk with you, Howard, and if I can't help you, then I can maybe direct you to somebody who can, and you can just email me.
I can actually say a little bit. I'm having a hard time getting a hold of Kalshi, K-A-L-S-H-I. That's the company that's doing the prediction services. Basically, what they're doing is that they have done some updates to their service systems, and now it doesn't work at all with voiceover with people who are blind. And man, you can't get a hold of them. There's no way to even. It's all AI driven customer service, and I've been trying to figure out a way to get a hold of them, and let them know that they got to fix some of their ADA compliance issues.
Can you give us the exact name, and then everybody listening can also maybe help out?
Yeah, Kalshi, KALSHI.com. That's the company that does the prediction markets where you can bet yes or no on different outcomes like political races or what will the price of Bitcoin be. And they also have a big issue right now going on where they didn't pay off on a certain bet if a certain leader in Iran would not be there because he was killed. So they have a death thing that if somebody dies on death, you can't bet they'll leave office. And that's my issue. I don't have any problem with them as far as money issues. It's just that they're just no longer accessible to be used with voiceover, like on an iPhone or a screen reader.
And Howard, you can email me if you want. It's just alex@urbelis.com, which is my last name. So it's alex@urbelis.com. That's Umbrella Romeo Bravo Echo Lima India Sierra.com.
I had a question for our caller. I was just curious. Are you looking on these? I guess this is like a Polymarket, these kinds of betting things. Do you just go on there like on speculation? Are you doing anything in particular? What interests you about these platforms, or are you just kind of exploring? Yeah.
I have an actual account with them that has a couple $100 in it, and I like to bet yes and no. And what happened was I did a stupid thing. I updated their app, and now I can't even make bets because there's a certain button on this particular app which says like to buy. If you do Google searches, you'll see there's some issues about it. They're having a lot of issues. And they just don't even, if you try to call customer service, they got no phone numbers, nothing like that. And what I was hoping is somebody with your knowledge can tell me how can you get a hold of a live person. That's basically what I wanted to do.
Howard, let me ask you, do you have a Gmail account?
Do I have what?
A Gmail account.
Do you know about QRZ.com? You know what that is? It's the stuff for ham radios. I can give out my ham call. You can find my email that way.
Well,
you know my ham calls.
Well, the reason I ask is because if you have a Gmail account, you can access Gemini, gemini.google.com, and just simply ask there, how do I reach a human at this particular company?
I've tried Grok, and they give you, you go to their site, and nobody says it. If you go to Reddit and look at all of their stuff, people are complaining that there's no human customer service. You just get into an AI loop.
All right, sounds like a challenge for our listeners and for our legal people, and we'll see what we can find out.
But I might send a request in just to 2600 emails to you guys at 2600?
OTH@2600.com.
I might just send and say, this is Howard. Could Alex get back to me?
Okay.
And that's all. I just wanted to. I don't want to. And if you needed a, if you needed me to pay your fee, I don't like abusing people's professional things.
Right. All right. Well, we'll look into it for sure and get the word out.
It's kind of frustrating that they have an issue, and I can't believe how companies are going to the point where you can't even get to speak to a person anymore. It's just ridiculous. Everything is AI driven. Even when you call up, a bank, if you don't say the exact way, you can't get the answers anymore. And they call it customer service when it's all AI driven.
I hear you. It's frustrating as hell. Listen, Howard, have a good night. Thanks for calling, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you very much, Alex. I enjoy listening to you, Alex. You make a lot of sense. And I tell you what, I'm amused that the attorney would admit that he did some hacking. It's amazing what we guys did back in the 60s and 70s.
Very true, except I don't think Alex was around back then, but he definitely has made a name for himself.
Yeah, later 70s, yeah. But thank you for that, Howard. I appreciate that.
Yes. That's our last call, I think, because we have filled the hour. We found some interesting things on shortwave. This might be a jammer. There was a number station here a little while ago. This is 11175 kilohertz. There's some other frequencies I'm trying right now.
Sounded like Pac-Man was there for a moment.
Well, that was the signal from the jammer that I had found from last week. That was a recording of the jammer of 7910.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
The jammering was being done by Pac-Man. We've confirmed it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, I've heard about enough of that for tonight. But, go to websdr.org, and you can pick all kinds of locations to tune shortwave radios. You can go into the AM band as well and listen to local radio stations in various countries. It's fascinating. It's amazing. A lot of people can do it at the same time at the same tuner. That is definitely something. Now, if you want to write to us, we're at oth@2600.com. We have all kinds of exciting things coming up. We'll be doing radio again next week, 7 p.m. on WBAI, 8 o'clock here on Overtime on YouTube. We are working on Hope stuff. There will be some information on that coming up pretty soon. We are in the midst of working some things out, so stay tuned on that. Let your friends know. We will have more news imminently. That's all we can say. I'm sorry.
All right. And happy 150th birthday to the telephone.
Can't believe we missed it. So we have to wait for the 200th now.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Or the 151st, and just, you know, if we start planning now, we can have a really kick-ass party next year.
151. Yeah, I guess that's a good number. Why not?
Yeah,
it's a palindrome. It's a palindrome number. Those are always fun.
Who doesn't love a palindrome? We have had over 70 people with us for the last little while, and it's been fantastic. Thank you to everyone. We had a lot of first-time chatters tonight, which was great. And I hope we can keep up this kind of momentum, man.
You know, it's amazing, and, you know, I don't regret it at all. We are so thrilled to have over 70 listeners. And meanwhile, you go to YouTube, and some, like, you know, 12-year-old surfer has a million, and he's not satisfied with that. What kind of a world is this?
Yeah, but they're monetized, and we're not.
We're not monetized. Wait, they make money, too, on top of having a million. Yeah, it's ridiculous. What this world is all topsy-turvy.
You know what? I have an idea.
What's that?
Well, this is the thing, because we're audio only. If we did an unboxing video, I bet we'd get views.
I am not doing that. I've said that a million times. I have my standards.
I might do one as a parody, but not this week.
Actually, I don't even know what I'm saying I'm not going to do, but I just don't feel like it's wise.
We'll explain later.
Okay, all right.
We'll do like black and white, like noir. I have it in my head. It's fine.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We will see you again. Have a good night.